This is Mae Warren. Today is the 2nd of May, 1996, and I'm in Lexington, Virginia with Dallas Hagwood. And I want to know what made you have this pioneer spirit to come to Washington and Lee in its second year, right?
Mm-hmm. I was in second class. I had never heard of Washington and Lee, so I never came into it with a pioneer spirit. I went to an all-girls school for high school. Actually, I was there for 7 years. So coming from that environment and also living in Nashville, Tennessee, at the time there wasn't a big alumni group that had gone to WNL. Now there are, you know, more and more people. And also coming from an all-girls school, of course, no one before me had ever gone. So it wasn't like it was a school that I had heard of, you know, from older friends that had gone there. So I really had no idea where I was going to go to school. So in my junior year, 40 girls got on a bus with my headmaster, and he was very brave, dressed us up in dresses every day and took us to see all the schools on the Eastern Seaboard. We went everywhere. We saw about 3 colleges a day. It was just an unbelievable stint. We went to North Carolina. We went to see Richmond and UVA, and went to see Duke and Dartmouth and Yale and Harvard and Brown, and we saw them all, and literally at such a pace, you wouldn't believe it. So 2 weeks later, we're still on this bus, and we are exhausted. Coming back down, and we'd seen University of Richmond, came back through, and it was our final night, and we were spending the night here in Lexington. And we were also dead tired when we got here. It was about 11:30, but I called my mom on the phone, and she said, "Well, how has your trip been?" I was like, "Well, it's been exhausting, but we've seen a lot of schools." And she said, well, where do you think you want to go?" And I was like, "You know, I haven't seen anything that I like. Everything's so big," and I went to a real small high school. Mm-hmm. I was like, "Everything is so big and impersonal, and we're just kind of all walking around in a big clump of people, and just haven't really gotten a great feeling." She's like, "Well, I'm sorry, you know, we'll go to California, we'll go to Texas, we'll look around different schools, you'll find mm-hmm. something that you like." And she said, "Well, don't you have another school to look at tomorrow before you drive home?" And I said, "Well, something called Washington and Lee, it's all male. There's no way I'm going to go to an all-male school." She was like, "Okay, well, when you get home, we'll look through some more brochures and pick out where we're going to go." So, lo and behold, the next day we wake up, we put on our dresses again, and we come to WNL. And the reason why we were stopping by WNL was, you know, obviously to see the school, but my headmaster was real good friends with Bill Hartog. I think they had gone to school together or something. So he was like, "I want to stop by and see Bill and have him show you his school. They're just now going co-ed, you know, next year will be the first year, and since you're juniors, you know, you'll be accepted in the second class if you want to apply." So we went, and he had arranged for us to eat lunch here, which was just mortifying to us because it was all men on campus at the time, and eat lunch in the freshman dining hall. But when we went in, they had 20 tour guides show up, and instead of taking us in this big clump of 40, they split us up in groups of 2. And took us around the campus, and everybody was, "Hey Bob, hey Bill," everybody knew everybody else. And it was just a great feeling when I was like, this is so much different from what I saw at a lot of these other campuses. Of course, our tour guide was funny and really nice. Then we all got back together and went to go to lunch, and we kind of filed into, all the freshmen were already there and eating. And here come 2 girls in dresses, and then there were 4, and then there were 10, and there were 20, and suddenly we got this standing ovation. And so it was just a really funny day. And everybody was like, "Oh my gosh." And so we had to sit there and eat. But I just remember eating lunch at this table of, you know, freshman guys and just thinking, you know, these people are really nice. You know, they're laughing about the fact that we're here, but they're also saying, "You know, this is great." So we all got back on the bus, and we had an 8-hour drive home, and all we could talk about was everybody who was going to apply to Washington and Lee. I mean, it was so funny. Of the 40 people, everybody was like, "Well, I was going to go to Brown, but now I'm thinking about applying." And I wanted to go to Princeton, so I was like, "Well, I'm bagging that. I'm going to go to Washington and Lee." And it was so funny. We all went back, and about 20 of us applied early. And I was the only one that got in because they weren't accepting that many women at the mm-hmm. time. And I was the hated one in high school after that because mm-hmm. I got to go. But that was kind of the story, from just not even knowing anything about the school to going home. And my mother, when I got home, was like, "I'm really sorry you didn't find anything." I was like, "Well, actually, I'm applying early somewhere." She was like, "Oh my gosh." So I did, and that was the only school I applied to.
Wow, what a story.
Well, I mean, it's kind of a funny story. I know I've told it a million times, but it's just so funny how my life changed, you know, dramatically.
Truly, overnight.
Overnight, you know, because WNL certainly affected my afterlife as much as it as my college life, and in a very positive way. I'm almost enjoying being an alum, you know, as much, if not more, than when I was here, just because of the camaraderie that just continues. So it really is, I look back on it, and I'm grateful. I mean, I wasn't even going to go on this college trip because I thought, ugh, 2 weeks with these girls on this bus, what a nightmare. But it really did change my life for the better.
And you never would have found it on your
own. I never would have found it on my own. And I hate to say that, you know, I hate to say, well, I'd never heard of Washington and Lee, but it's just, you know, the truth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Nashville, Tennessee just wasn't a big WNL, you know, it was all Vanderbilt. And I broke so many traditions coming to WNL. I broke their tradition, but I also broke my family's tradition. You know, my grandparents went to Vanderbilt, my mom went to Vanderbilt, my brother went to Vanderbilt. So I kind of, you know, broke two things at once. But
tell me what you're saying about the afterlife. I like that expression.
The afterlife. Well, I guess I would just have to say the after college life. But I've become, I guess, more involved with WNL after school than I felt like I was involved in it, you know, when I was here. I mean, I'm sure I was very involved when I was here. But just finding, I just moved from Atlanta, and the Atlanta chapter is a really big alumni chapter, and we do so much stuff. And I dated a guy, or I'm still dating a guy, who went to UVA, and he used to just be flabbergasted at the amount of parties that we had, or building houses, or whatever it was that we were going to do on behalf of WNL. He always used to say, what on earth? Well, y'all have something going on in Atlanta, you know, every other week, and it's just amazing. And I was like, I don't know what it is. We all continue to get back together and really enjoy being together, whether we knew each other at school or not, which in most cases we didn't. But you just make a whole new network of friends, and you just have that WNL bond. And I know that's kind of trite and cliche, and people always say, oh, the WNL bond lasts forever. But it really is. I mean, it really is interesting to see that we get together and plan a party, and everybody comes. Everybody that went to WNL, whether they know who's hosting it or even know the people that are attending. So that's what I've really enjoyed most about, you know, being an alum. It's just, you know, you always feel like you're a part. And whenever I see a kid on the street in Nashville, I live in Nashville now again, whenever I see a kid on the street with a WNL hat, I ask, did you go to WNL? And usually I get, no, this is my friend's hat. But, you know, but I'm hoping that they'll say, yeah, and we can talk about something. I actually ran into a guy at a bar. I guess this is about 2 or 3 years ago in Atlanta, and he had on a WNL hat. I was like, hey, did you go to WNL? And he said, yeah. And he was a junior at WNL. And I said, well, you know, where did you live? Well, where do you live? And he said, oh, I live at, and the houses all around here all have names. He says, I live at Aqua Velva. I said, Aqua Velva? I've never heard of Aqua Velva. And he said, well, it was right next to, and he described another house that I forget the name now. I was like, oh, that used to be Sigma Aqua, because the guys that lived there were water polo players. So it has evolved now, obviously, from Sigma Aqua to Aqua Velva. But I thought that was so funny.
Great. I'm so glad you told me that, because I did an interview with a current student who was telling me about Aqua Velva, and he said, I have no idea where the name
came from. That's so funny. But I thought that kind of made me feel good. I was like, you know, that was so funny. Sigma Aqua turned into Aqua Velva. These guys had no idea, you know, where it came from and how it evolved to that. And we lived in a couple of houses. I lived in a house called The Border. Which a bunch of Phi Delts used to live in, and they hated us because they accused us of stealing their house, which we, I guess, did. I mean, I think they lost the house, and then we got it, but it sure didn't look like it was stolen. But then we got kicked out the very next year, and it turned into the Baptist Student Union. So they were kind of laughing at us. But then we lived in a house called Amityville.
Who's we?
I lived with a lot of different people. My freshman year, we all lived in the dorms, and then my sophomore year, I moved in with 8 girls into a house, most of them made up of girls that were on my hall. Mm-hmm. And then my junior and senior year, lived with, you know, who I consider, you know, my college roommates, because we lived together for 2 years. Mm-hmm. Some of the girls, we came from the border over to Amityville, and some were just other friends that moved in. But those 8 girls, we've just stayed in touch and have just been you know, best friends ever since. And I actually spent the night with one of them last night in Charlottesville and had the best time. And I was talking to her about a lot of things, you know, just because I was going to be talking to you and talking about co-education. I was asking her kind of things that she remembered, especially about the co-education piece. And we were talking about friendships, and she was like, you know, I'm, she said, I'm almost afraid, but it's not, afraid is not a good word. She said, I'm afraid I might never have as good of friends as I had, you know, with you guys. And I know that we're going to grow apart. And the really great thing about Debbie now is I think that it attracts people from all over the place. So I lived with 8 girls and became very best friends with them, and I'm still very best friends with them, but we all came from different states. There wasn't a one of us that came from the same state. And now we're all also back in our, you know, respective states, which I think, you know, is just great, because I've got somebody in Texas, I got somebody in Florida and DC, 2 girls living abroad, and, you know, they're still my very best friends. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think if you had gone to like Georgia or Vanderbilt's a little bit like this, but gone to Georgia or UVA, where maybe it's not as diverse a drawing. And people always criticize Debbie now. They say, well, you know, you don't pull from a very diverse population. But I really think they've done a good job, you know, since I was here, of pulling people from all over the place. I know it's probably easier with girls because there weren't that many, so they kind of had like one from every state. So maybe that's why it was so uncanny that we all came from such different places.
Mm-hmm. I want to go back to that lunch.
Mm-hmm.
The guys gave you a standing ovation.
It was really funny. It was we were so embarrassed and mortified to be here. You know, we were like, trotting on these guys' space. This is so strange. We all, you know, I come from being at a girls' school for 7 years and just kind of walking around in our dresses. There was not another woman on campus.
So these were all freshmen.
They were all freshmen, because all freshmen eat in the dining hall. And this class was the last class of males.
And they were welcoming you.
And they, well, who knows?
What happened when you actually came on campus? Did you find that same spirit of welcome?
We actually did. We found a little bit, because I think it might have been one of the first times that an entire busload of women got off to look. Because, again, the people on campus at that time were all male, because it was my junior year. So we were kind of, you know, the tour guides certainly were very jovial and very excited. And, you know, I think the whole episode was kind of a funny event, that this many women trampled off of this bus to see W&L. Obviously, the entire year was replete with, you know, controversy. And, you know, it's coming. And, you know, the decision obviously had already been made maybe a year or two before that. Maybe even before that, I'm not sure when the actual date was. But these guys knew when they applied. I believe this class probably didn't know when they applied that they were not going to go to an all-male institution. So I think it was an interesting class of guys, you know, that freshman year. So when we walked in, you know, they were definitely the last class of males who we, you know, we always say, oh, well, after that class left, it was a lot better. But it was a real neat experience. We walked in, and just to have them stand up and clap, I mean, it was just so funny. And, you know, part of us were like, oh, well, they're making fun of us. But then I thought, no, they're not. They're really not. They're saying, you know, it's okay that you're coming here. Because they could tell we were pretty embarrassed about being there in the first place. But just the whole bit on co-education that Jenny and I were talking about last night was, I never felt like, and people would ask me when I went back to Nationals, like, well, I'm applying earlier, or when I got in, they're like, oh, well, I know why you're going there, you know, 13-1 ratio. What a great, and I never thought about it that way. I really never thought, oh, well, I'm really going to get a lot of dates, you know, which, and I'm glad I didn't think about it that way, because there was a certain backlash of don't invite a W&L girl to to anything when I got here, which really, I think, got to a lot of girls, but I never, you know, had a lot of good friends and a lot of good guy friends that I would go to things with, so I never really noticed any problem.
Tell me about that sense of a backlash.
Well, it's really funny. I never really noticed it myself until a couple of my friends from freshman year transferred. A girl actually that I lived with half a sophomore year transferred to UVA. She was like, you know, this is ridiculous that there are only, you know, 200 of us, and yet, you know, half of us can't get dates to things. And it was kind of, I think a lot of the fraternities were saying, oh, it's cooler to invite somebody from Hollins and cooler. And I can understand that. You know, the whole aura of dating somebody that you don't have to, like, deal with every day, but you get to see them on the weekends or on a Wednesday night. I ended up dating somebody from Hampton, Sydney. So I certainly can't criticize anyone for, you know, who they decide to invite to a formal. But I do think that a lot of girls at first had a problem with that, because if you go to a Georgia or an Alabama or an Ole Miss or wherever you go to school, it's all sorority rush immediately and fraternity rush, and then you have mixers, and the big deal is who's asking who to what. And we certainly didn't have that environment here. It was fraternities and then women, which I loved. I had no problem with that at all, and I was very opposed to sororities coming on campus. Of course, I ended up joining one, but that's a whole long story itself. But the whole, I guess I'll get into that a little bit, the whole sorority thing, our freshman year petition went around, and we were like, no. You know, we don't want sororities to come. We're too small. We're a sorority in and of ourselves, you know, against Hollins, Mary Baldwin, Sweetbriar, list goes on. It's going to be, you know, it's going to tear our classes apart when we've just, you know, kind of formed a bond. Sophomore year, same thing. We all said, no. No sorority. So they didn't come. Finally, junior year, there were enough people, and there were enough sophomores now and freshmen whose classes were larger, there were more women, and who, I think the co-education thing was not as much of an issue at all. It was kind of like the guys that they had applied with knew it was co-ed, didn't think about the all-male part of it. So they didn't feel like they were treading on anybody's toes by saying, go sororities. We still kind of felt like, you know, watch your step, don't make the guys mad, you know, until probably my junior year, which I guess at that point was when it was all fully co-ed classes. So when the petition came around again, we all finally said, okay, sororities are coming no matter what. So we either choose to be a part, and really what I thought was, you know, I'd like to join a sorority because I see what the male alumni have when they come back and they have this bond with their fraternity brothers. They don't know them, of course, but they get to go to their parties and they you know, talk to the guy and I'm like, hey, I was a Phi Cap too or an SA. And I was like, you know, I don't want to come back and have all these girls running around Kappa, Kappa, Kappa and me going, you know, I never was really a part of that. You know, so that I, you know, I'm very isolated. Oh, well, I was second class of women. That's why we didn't have sororities. So I was like, got together with a group of friends. I was like, well, let's do this. So we actually started the first sororities after being so opposed to it. We kind of said, well, they're coming whether we choose to get involved or not. So I think we thought ahead to how we might feel when we came back and were kind of excluded from a very integral part of, you know, obviously what's become a very integral part of the women's life here. So I was real glad that we did that. And still when I come back, the Kappa say, you know, Kappa alum, and I get a Kappa newsletter, and it's a lot of fun. You know, whereas before I was like, ugh, no, don't want to do this.
So how did those sororities, I mean, you're explaining how they got started, but
yeah,
what were the logistics of it? How do you go about starting a sorority?
Well, actually, it's pretty funny. The thing that I didn't want about sororities was the whole rush thing, where I've seen my friends at other big universities just get torn apart by rush. And I had a couple of friends from Nashville went down to Ole Miss, and they were rushing Tridel and rushing Katy and everything down there. And they would talk about how they'd run from sorority house to sorority house and throw their makeup in the bush. And then they'd come out and, like, do themselves up and then go to the next house. It's like, oh, that sounds horrifying. And just the entire process. So I definitely didn't want to be any part of that. But when we were to start sororities, they had women come down from nationals and do interviews. So it was literally at one interview with a woman, and then they had matching where they got together and decided, and you had, I think, one party and then one interview. And they had a matching process where you picked which one you wanted. And there was no basis for knowing which sorority you wanted to be in, whether, unless your mother was in one or nationally you had maybe some friends that were in one. So we were kind of like, all right, well, we'll pick this. And if they had picked us, then you matched up and boom, you were a sorority. So it was a real different kind of rush for us. I think now it's very much more of the traditional process.
Was there anybody who wanted to be in sorority who wasn't accepted in?
They were very, very careful about that the first year. I think there may have been, and I'm sure they've got the statistics on it, but I think there may have been maybe 10 to 20 people that didn't fit at all. But I think that they came up with a process of getting them in somewhere. Mm-hmm. I know there were some people that didn't match with exactly which one they wanted, but they got in one. Mm-hmm. I remember there was this talk that they were going to be extremely careful about this first year of Rush, and even in the second year, because the second year of Rush was when we were doing it for the first time ourselves, and it could be really hurtful. And I think the school was real careful to watch how that process went to make sure that the exclusion wasn't going to be that great. So I don't know, you know, the details of how many numbers, but I think it wasn't that bad. I mean, I think people got in what they wanted to get in. The whole housing issue is kind of one that I'm a little bit close to, because I remember they asked us back then, what do you want for housing? And we had heard all the horror stories about Panhellenic rules nationwide about sorority houses. And we were like, oh no, you know, all these restrictions on who can be there and when, and restrictions about drinking out of beer bottles. You're not allowed to drink out of beer bottles in the sorority house, just dating back from I don't know when. So we were like, oh no, we're so used to living in, you know, kind of an open environment where you can just kind of come and go as you please, and you don't have a house mother wondering where you are or what you're doing. And so, you know, we said, you know, no to that. And that might have done a disservice to the people who are here now, still kind of struggling with the issue, especially now that they've required sophomores to live on campus, whereas before it was all freshmen on campus, which was great. But then by sophomore year, you could move out to the country or live in the city, which I absolutely loved, living in those houses, because you learn a sense of responsibility and a sense of community that you don't have when you're in a dorm, where you start paying your own rent, paying your own bills, splitting everything, buying your own groceries. I mean, that to me was ideal living in college. So I think what's happened now, since they're requiring sophomores to live on campus, is that the men on campus also means in the fraternity houses. And all I'm stating here is not necessarily my view, but a representation of a lot of discussions I've had with my classmates, the women, that it's kind of unfair, because now the women have to live in dorms their mm-hmm. sophomore year, which is basically what it equated to, because mm-hmm. the men always lived in the fraternity houses their sophomore year, so nothing's really changed for them. But now the requirement is kind of that women have to live in the dorms because they don't have housing. Mm-hmm. And I think had we known that back then, or had they even known 2 or 3 years ago, this issue's come up every year and they've said, no, don't worry about housing. But had they known about this impending stipulation, I'm pretty sure they would have said, yes, give us a sorority house so that we can live in the same way the guys do. But I don't know. It's kind of been a touchy subject around the women, just the alumni that are like, that is so unfair that they have to live on campus. We certainly understand why the university, and I struggle because I'm also on the board, so I have to watch what I say. But I understand that, you know, the university has to fill the rooms. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I guess that's enough on that issue.
No, that's you know, there aren't too many people who were there, so
yeah,
it's fairly important to get that story from somebody who was here. And you were actually an officer of your sorority.
Mm-hmm. I was a treasurer.
Uh-huh. What does that entail?
That was actually a lot more work, just being an officer, not just treasurer, but treasurer too. Being an officer in the sorority was a lot more work than we really thought, you know, it was going to be, because you do have to answer to a national board of people who are expecting you to turn in things, and I had to turn in financial statements and all this stuff, whereas we kind of went into it kind of like, oh, sorority, you know, be a part, have fun, have parties, do mixers, which never happened really. That's a whole nother story. But we realized it was a real commitment, and you had to be organized, and I had to send in monthly statements, you know, about how we stood, and I was like, this is like another job, you know? So, but it was a lot of fun, and I have a bond. Another thing about sororities that was nice is that otherwise I don't think that I would have ever met the classes below me. I would have had no reason to if they weren't in my classes, which I was kind of in a very rigid major, accounting and business admin, where you pretty much, you took the same classes with your group of people. It wasn't like an English major where sometimes you were in a class with seniors and freshmen. It was, you kind of had a structured level. So I'm fairly sure I wouldn't have met very many, if any, of the, you know, juniors, sophomores, and freshmen had it not been for sororities. So I think that is another beneficial thing there, is that you meet the four classes or the three classes above you, and then as you rise up, meet the three classes below you, whether it's through a rush situation or just through interaction through a sorority. So I think that was real good for me too, because now I've got, you know, multiple classes of girls that I'm friends with, not just mine, which, I mean, that's a limited number of people to come in contact with.
Yeah, I think that's really is a blessing.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me about those succeeding classes. Did those girls, were they
different?
Different?
Yes. I hope I'm not published on this. We did notice they were different. This is going to sound really strange. The classes got prettier and prettier, more outgoing. And I know people are like, oh, you're just saying that because you were jealous of the sophomore and freshman. But really, it was a phenomenon that we noticed, that the girls just got, well, and also there were more and more girls. In each class. I mean, our class was a ratio of 1-4, and by the time I was a senior, the freshman class was approaching the 60-40 mark. So I think that made a difference just in the whole makeup of the class. But we definitely noticed that they were, like I said, they were more outgoing about the sorority thing. They were, you know, less intimidated by the co-ed factor. It was almost as if they didn't notice anything at all. So we kind of did feel a little bit, not special in a good way, but just special in kind of an isolated way. One funny thing that I remember on the co-education issue is that obviously wasn't here in the first year, but from what I've heard, it was kind of a kid glove status the first year. It was like, don't say anything to upset the girls. You know, basically, if they heard any rumors of stuff going on, and there was a lot of media attention on the whole process. By the time we got here in the second year, the kid gloves were off, and it was like, okay, co-education is here, you know. So that's when kind of the backlash started. And Jenny remembered, when I was talking to her this morning, she remembered the exact same thing I did. The first thing that came to my mind is the t-shirt wars. But there was a t-shirt or a bumper sticker about anything related to co-education, the beginning of an error, you know, the Washington and Lee, L-E-I-G-H. I mean, it was just bumper stickers and t-shirts everywhere. So for my discussion tomorrow, I brought show and tell, brought a couple of t-shirts.
Great.
The one t-shirt that I bought but never wore until I graduated was a t-shirt that said W&L Co-Ed on the front. And that's the part I like. But on the back it says, quality in big words does not have to travel, was underneath. So obviously it was a, you know, cutting down the girls' schools, which I didn't feel comfortable wearing while I was here because I had a lot of good friends that went there. And I thought it was also kind of me. That wasn't me. That wasn't a me thing to do, but I thought it was a funny t-shirt. So I wore it after I, you know, graduated. And I was just actually going through my closet a couple of days ago, and I was like, you know, I need to take this back to school for show and tell, because this is what I remember from freshman, mainly my freshman year, the second class of girls. They had a petition that went around, and it said on top of it, repeal co-education. You know, so by the time I was here, they felt comfortable enough to start talking about it, you know, to say.
And who's they?
I don't know who they are, but I signed it. I was like, you know, try. This is going to be funny. You know, obviously they couldn't. The legal ramifications of that would be astronomical. They really were serious about this, or they were just trying to make a statement. But that's also what Jenny remembered, was just every week there was an editorial in the Ringtum 5 about co-education. Somebody was writing something about it. And then just the t-shirts that kept coming out, and who could make the funniest t-shirt about W&L women or the fact that W&L had gone co-ed. And we really just, that's the first thing that came to her mind. I was like, that is just so funny that you said that, because that is the first thing that came to my mind too. And all that really died down by the time we were juniors. It was almost gone. Mm-hmm. There was no talk of it at all. And after having been such a big moneymaker, I didn't know how on earth they'd come up with a t-shirt to make any money after that. But that's really what I remember, is that the first year there was not much said, not much backlash at all. But by the time we got here, they felt like, okay, well, we did good for a year. Now we're going to tell you how we really feel about it.
What about in the classroom? Well, did you sense tension in the classroom?
I sensed a tension in myself just because I had never been to school with boys. So whether it was a tension that was really there or whether it was just me adjusting to raising my hand again in front of guys, and I think I had really no problem with raising my hand because I think that's what you learn. And the whole single-sex education thing is really an issue right now, both in higher education and in lower schools. And I can imagine if somebody said, oh, your high school is going co-ed, I'd throw a fit. So I know how they felt. I know how the alumni felt. I do know that it was, I think, the best thing for the school. I mean, I've seen where WNL has come from where it was. And just being on the board, I see all these statistics fly through my desk every day, and I'm like, that's just great. And, you know, moving up in the rankings and just nationally, the way I hear WNL spoken about is totally different from when I was here, especially in my hometown. I mean, everybody knows what it is. Everybody's kid wants to go there or didn't get in, and, you know. So it really has changed. And I forget what I was actually starting there.
Well, talking about the classroom.
Oh, yeah.
I've heard that part of the reason they went co-education is because the quality of students
right
was not well real hot.
Well, when you think about it, it's just the number of applicants they had to choose from, and that's just a process that just degrades every year. The number of people, I mean, men just simply weren't applying here because they wanted to go to school with women. So just when the number of applications rose, not only from women coming in, but from men who now considered WNL a viable option, mm-hmm. or an even a great option, because they would have loved to have come here, but they didn't want to go to an all-male school because of certain stigmas attached to that, or whatever their reasons were, obviously the application pool being larger, they could be more selective. So that has definitely, I think, improved the quality. And I don't know how much the guys would interact with professors or things. I mean, girls haven't, I guess, a brown-nosing characteristic to them a little bit. They raise their hands a little more often. They speak out a little bit more, but maybe that encouraged the guys. So I don't know. The professors would probably be an interesting discussion, the ones that were here before and after, just what the classroom environment was. But I never really noticed any tension in the classroom, but again, I didn't take a whole lot of classes my freshman, sophomore, junior, senior year with other classes than mine. I think, and actually I do have one funny story. I think if I had taken as a freshman, like a history class with a bunch of senior guys from one of the more notable history professors who have a reputation for liking the all-male classes, I think you would have noticed a lot more tension. The one thing I do remember, and I just now remembered this story, my very first class here was a PE, and I had tennis. It was, 8 o'clock or whatever the first bell rang. 8 o'clock out, on the tennis courts, and I was the only girl in the class, which wasn't a rare thing at the time. I mean, something like an 8 o'clock tennis class and then only having 200 women to choose from, they just did not choose tennis that particular semester. So I got out there, and the coach will remain nameless, but he was actually a really nice guy, but got out there, and it was kind of funny. I was the only girl anyway, and it was obviously going to pose a problem in playing matches because I didn't have a girl to play against. So I think he was kind of like, now what do I do with this girl? So we're sitting out there, and I didn't play tennis very well, which is why I took it in PE. But I had gone to this all-girls preppy hoity-toity school for 7 years, so I certainly knew everything there was to know about tennis. I knew all the grips and all the rules and everything. So that first day, I walked out there, and he threw a tennis ball at me so hard. I remember it hit me in the gut. I wasn't expecting it. And he said, The first thing to learn about tennis is hand-eye coordination. I'll never forget the men all just dying laughing, and I was literally like, oh my God, what have I gotten myself into? But then he asked me, he said, now, Miss Hagwood, what do you know about the grips in tennis? And I said, well, there's a Eastern, Western, and Continental. And I'll never forget knowing the answer to that. And he looked at me, and everybody looked at me, and I was like, just learned that. It was just really funny. And after that, he, you know, didn't give me a hard time at all. But I'll never forget being tossed at a land speed record to a tennis ball and just being like, oh. And just kind of looking around, everybody was laughing. I really thought, oh my God, I'm going to have to leave here. But after that first incident, I never had any kind of male-female problem at all. And I don't know what he was trying to prove or whether he was trying, there was obvious tension there. Maybe he was just trying to break it up, because it was really me standing there going, oh my God, there's really no other girl coming to join me in this class. But that was about the only class that I had that was funny like that. Just remembered that story.
That's a good one. That's a good one. Well, what about the big occasions, the big Washington Lee occasions, like fancy dress?
Well, I had an interesting fancy dress experience. I don't ever recall like worrying about getting a date. I mean, that was always a big deal. You know, people sitting around wondering, are they going to get a date to the big occasion? I asked, I guess 2 out of my 4 years, I asked my own date to a fancy dress.
So, that helps. That takes care of it.
I mean, I never saw it as being real pioneer. I just kind of saw it as, well, I'm just going to ask, you know, one of the guys was a lacrosse player, and I knew that he wasn't going to, I forget what the circumstances were, but I think they had like a lacrosse game or whatever, and I was busy doing something that Friday night. I knew he couldn't do the Friday night event. So I was like, well, this would be a perfect person. And he was a friend of mine. I said, this would be a perfect person to do fancy dress with, because I know that he can only do the Saturday night deal. He can't go out Friday night, and neither can I, because I think I don't remember what it was I was involved in. So I asked him to go, and he was like kind of grateful. He was like, that's great, because I didn't really want to ask somebody knowing that I couldn't do the whole deal. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, this is perfect. And then another year I asked an alumni, a guy who had already graduated, who was also a friend of mine, and I was like, wouldn't it be fun for you to come back for fancy dress? So I kind of like early on in the game eliminated myself from the running, I think, which made it easier, because that was pretty stressful. If you weren't dating somebody at the time, wondering, you know, who's going to ask me? Is anybody going to ask me? If nobody asked me, what am I going to do? And I know a lot of girls went through that. But for 2 years, I was dating somebody. And then the other 2 years, I simply just asked somebody very early on. So I was kind of, you know, not having to worry about it. I guess that was my self-protection.
So tell me what fancy dress was like.
Well, let's see. I guess everybody will also agree with me on this. I had a better time at mock convention than I did at fancy dress was great, and every year it was real fun, but mock convention just had something special about it. And I read something recently about how every 4 years when there's a mock convention, they might not have a fancy dress, which is probably a good idea. I mean, that's a lot of work for a lot of students who are involved in both.
Yeah. Which fancy dress kind of fell flat.
Sure, and I hate to see that happen to a fancy dress, because fancy dress is such a great tradition.
Yeah.
But that's just something that I thought of. I think that would be a great thing for the university, just to say, you know, put your foot down. Let's make mock convention every 4 years a big blast. Like it is. I think mock convention has just grown and grown and grown. And then,
it
you know, fancy dress just can't even think about competing, not to mention their proximity. I think it's too much to handle. But I think if fancy dress stood alone in a year, it certainly is just a great event and a good time for students to do work together, which I think is a lot of fun. And having the big bands is just a really neat thing that you don't get exposed to at that age. So I think fancy dress is great. I think the Thursday night performances were always great. But I really do think it does not need to fall in the shadow of a mock convention, because if you go to one that's kind of halfway there, whether it's based on expectation or whatever, then you're going to kind of remember that. You're going to think, oh, fancy dress. Or, so I'd hate to see it lose its, you know, its glamour.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the fact that it's been around for so many years is just great. And looking back at the old ones, I don't know if they're going to run out of themes or
was there
start
one
recycling.
Was there one that was particularly memorable in the theme? Or?
Oh, boy. The Dark Continent. I remember that one. That was a good theme. It was basically an African theme, and there was a live elephant. And I remember that one. That was a real good one. I was also here during the controversy of I even forget what the theme was. It was something about the Old South, and there was a boycott by law students not coming to fancy dress because of, you know, obviously the racial impact. And I thought that was real unfortunate. You know, it's like you got to stand up for something, but does it have to be at the expense of, you know, other people who are trying to enjoy this or other people who thought of the idea and have thrown themselves into it? And so I thought that was a real unfortunate time for the school. I know it was an unfortunate time for me because it was like, you know, I went to an all basically white high school. The one black girl at my entire high school was a great friend of mine, and she came to W&L. And she was one of the black women here when I was here, Jessica Reynolds. She's just the greatest girl in the whole world.
So was she a different year from you?
She was a year above me. So she came the class above me. She was just awesome. And she's living back in Nashville now. But I just remember just the race thing was always a pretty big issue back then. I guess it still is. Just the number of students, you know, the racial mix. I thought that was just a real unfortunate thing that they brought it to the forefront. You know, it was always kind of an undercurrent, which I think was fine with everybody at the time. I don't know, and I never really talked to Jessica about it. We drove back and forth to home a bunch. Never really talked to her about it. She seemed, you know, happy as a lark here. She loved it just as much as I did. So I never, you know, never kind of got to the core of what the problem was, if any. And I think at that time, when the law school did that, it kind of dredged everything up, and everybody started talking about it. And maybe that was for the better, but I just remember that as kind of souring that fancy dress.
Do you remember what year that was?
Ooh, let's see. It was probably either my sophomore or junior year. Mm-hmm. It was the Reconstruction. That was the name of the fancy dress. And maybe it was a weird theme. I mean, looking back on it. And now in this PC times, maybe that was a little bit out there. Mm-hmm. But it was, you know, it was a theme just like any other era, you know, mm-hmm. that's been celebrated. So I don't know. I remember that as being kind of a time when I wasn't happy to be here. I felt like, because I've never been a real bra-burning, protesting person anyway. And I kind of get at ill ease, I guess is not the right word, but ill at ease. When I see protests, you know, I've never been one to really frolic in a Berkeley type environment. Mm-hmm. I'm just kind of like, you know, go with the flow, which when people refer to me as, you know, pioneer, I was like, I don't want to be a pioneer. I don't want to come across as being, you know, Miss Go Out There and Get 'Em. And I remember when the girls in my class would run for things, like executive committee, president of executive committee, things like that. I remember there was just this undercurrent of who does she think she is? No offense to those girls. I knew who they are. They knew who they are. They would hate me if I even said that. But I know a lot of girls thought that and a lot of guys thought that. It's like, what does she think she's doing, this freshman girl coming in, running for the highest office in the class? I remember that thought going through my mind. Which, you know, I'm almost ashamed to say that because that was great that they were getting out there doing that and laying the groundwork for other women to be. But I just remember, and that's just, I guess, a me thing, is that I'm not the one that wants to always, you know, toss the boat, you know. I also remember one funny thing, kind of along the controversial lines, is that the biggest controversy when I was here was Coke versus Pepsi. I look back on it, and I think about people that went to school in the 60s and 70s and what they were standing for and what they were standing up for and what their bumper stickers were all about. And I look at the 80s and look at when we were in college, and that our biggest gripe and what we stood up for the most was that the school was going from Coke to Pepsi. And I was like, looking back on that, I was actually one of the people asked in one of those Ringtone 5 things. There's a picture of me, and I've got it cut out, and it says, you know, what do you think about the switch to Pepsi? And my quote was, worst things have happened. That's really how I felt about it. But that may have summed up my 4 years here, was that the co-education thing was going on, yes. But then the only other thing that happened was that the school changed over to Pepsi. Whereas now there's some serious stuff going on with fraternities and the hazing and you know, students being upset about housing and being sad about. We just didn't have or maybe I just wasn't aware of it. It didn't seem that we had that many big causes going on or that many big scruffles going on at any point in time. And that's about all I remember.
I need to turn the tape over.
Okay.